From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. If you're lucky these days, your favorite band might put out one new album every year. Maybe there'll be a song on some soundtrack, or maybe there'll be an EP. In the United States in 1965, Capitol Records released four albums by the Beatles. Not only was the band prolific, but Capitol used its business savvy, releasing records in the U.S. that had fewer songs, and often different songs, from their British counterparts. When the CDs came into favor in the late 1980s, those American versions of the Beatle albums became unavailable in favor of the British versions. American fans growing up with 1965 albums like The Beatles 6 or The Early Beatles would now have to pull out their vinyl to hear those again. That is, until now. A new box set of four American Beatles CDs is out this week. The Capitol Albums Volume 2 includes four original Beatle records and some wonderful liner notes by our guest, Bruce Spreiser. Bruce is the author of a series of well-researched books on the Beatles, including The Beatles Stories on Capitol Records and The Beatles Are Coming. Bruce, tell us the titles of the four CDs that came out this week.
The Early Beatles, which was released originally on March 22, 1965. Beatles 6, which came out on June 14th of that year. The Help soundtrack album, which was on August 13th, and Rubber Soul, which was released in the United States on December 6, 1965.
So this is the second in a series of box sets reissuing the American versions of the albums. So what's the reason we have such different releases for the U.S. and what came out in Europe?
Well, this was standard industry practice in those days where we weren't living in a global community, so each country would market the music of foreign artists as they saw fit. And people might say, well, the Beatles foreign? They're just from England. But in those days, that was something exotic and far away. The other thing is that there were different philosophies of how things should be done, and also economics played into it. In England, royalties are computed in such a way as a per-disc basis. So if a record album has 10, 12, 14, 18 songs, the same royalty would be paid on that album, and it would be split pro rata between the different music publishers. Huh. Whereas in America, the record companies had to pay a mechanical license fee for each song on an album. So if you had 12 songs on an album as opposed to 14, you were paying for two less songs. And at the time, that was 2 cents per song. So you were talking about 4 cents per record. And if the record sold a lot of copies, then that could add up to $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 very quickly. So for that reason, the standard in the U.S. was generally 11 or 12 songs per album, whereas in England it was generally 14.
There also seemed to be some philosophy, and maybe it was Brian Epstein's philosophy, I'm not sure, that their singles, the Beatles singles, weren't on the British albums, which was exactly the opposite of what Capitol Records did over here in America. They thought a hit single makes a hit album.
The philosophy that George Martin and Brian had was that people should not be required to buy the same two songs twice. If we put it out on a single and they buy an album and those two songs are on it, they bought the song twice.
That's almost very kind of them to think about it like that.
You know, but growing up as a kid, I remember I hated it when the single wasn't on the album. I wanted the singles on the album. And I think Capitol not only recognized that, but believed that hit singles would make hit albums. And the key to that was really with Meet the Beatles. Prior to that album, no teenage rock album had really sold more than 200,000 or 300,000 units. Kids bought singles, not albums. But with Meet the Beatles, propelled by the single I Want to Hold Your Hand, in 2 months' time, it had sold 3.6 million units, you know, well above what anyone in the industry dreamed possible at that time. And that made Capitol and the record industry realize that rock albums could be big sellers if you filled them with really good music as opposed to a couple of songs and a lot of filler. Of course, none of this would have been possible without the great music the Beatles were providing.
Let's play something from the first disc in this four CD collection, the one called The Early Beatles, and we'll come back and talk about some of the song's origins.
Oh,
a great performance by John.
It's unbelievable. And, you know, the great thing about this box set is we now have these songs in stereo for the first time on CD. And when you listen to that John vocal, you can literally hear him ripping his vocal cords apart. And the story behind that, Tony Barrow, who was their press agent and was in the studio when that was recorded, told me that it was recorded at the very end of the night, and John had had a very bad cold throughout the session. So he was constantly going to the canteen in the studio and downing milk to make his throat feel better, kind of gargling with milk. And he said after Twist and Shout, John went in and took a swig of milk or two, and Tony looked in the glass, and there was blood in the milk. So that shows you, you know, the power of John's vocal. If it sounds like he shredded his vocal cords, he really did.
Now, this came out, the early Beatles came out in 1965, but obviously the songs on this record and that song as well are much earlier. They're from 1963 and 1964. Why did Capitol Records put this stuff out in 1965?
The short story is that the Beatles originally, after being turned down a couple of times by Capitol Records, ended up on an independent company out of Chicago named VJ Records, which specialized in R&B and gospel recordings. And they released these Beatle recordings during 1963 with very little success. They released two singles. One was Please Please Me, one was From Me to You. Neither sold well, and they kind of forgot about the Beatles. The company was in financial trouble. They were going to put out a Beatles album that summer, but never had the money. It actually didn't come out, although a lot of books say it did. When VJ Records heard that Capitol had finally signed the Beatles in November of 63 and that they were doing this big publicity campaign, we then had a situation where VJ said, wait a minute, we used to have the Beatles. And so they rushed out there introducing the Beatles album. Capitol sued VJ, VJ sued Capitol. The short story is Capitol had better attorneys. And so a settlement was reached between Capitol and VJ. And under the terms of the settlement, VJ had the right to release their 16 Beatle masters up through October 15th, 1964, at which time the masters would revert to Capitol. And VJ thought it was a good deal because they knew nobody would be caring about the Beatles by then, you know, my goodness. So, yeah. You know, and incidentally, that settlement agreement was signed on April Fool's Day. what ultimately happened was that introducing the Beatles was in the pipeline, and then after a couple of months, it had pretty much sold out everywhere, and there was a void in the Beatles catalog that these great songs that the Beatles recorded in 1962 and 63 were no longer available. So Capitol put out the early Beatles to fill that void. And the album did not sell well initially because most Beatle fans already had those songs in introducing the Beatles. But it was a steady seller over the years and did eventually become a certified platinum album.
Or a lot of them had the song on 45s.
Like Twist and Shout that we heard. That was on the Tolly subsidiary of VJ.
Well, let's listen to one more tune from the early Beatles. Actually, I don't hear very often. A song called Ask Me Why. That's a great song. I forgot about all those fun chord changes and stuff.
Yeah, and that was an interesting one because it was actually the flip side of the first Beatles single to be released in America. It had Please Please Me on the A side on VJ 498, where the group's name was misspelled with two T's in the middle. And that record, if anyone out there has it in near-mint condition, those go now for over $3,000 to $4,000.
Wow. Let's move on to Beatles 6, which is the second disc in this collection of the Capitol Albums Volume 2 that's just come out this week. We're talking with Bruce Spizer, who's our guest. There is no such thing as Beatles 6 over in England, and no record that even slightly resembles Beatles 6 in England.
Well, what this album does is it's a great example of what Capitol was doing with the Beatles catalog. Toward the end of 1964, the Beatles album in England was called Beatles for Sale. and Capitol took 8 songs from that album and put that on their album Beatles 65. They deliberately kept off 8 Days a Week, which they knew would make a great hit single, and in early 1965 released 8 Days a Week, which indeed was a big hit. Then when they wanted to put together a new album, they could use 8 Days a Week to help propel the sales of that album. And Capitol, in the summer of 65, realized that there was not going to be a new Beatles album until the Help soundtrack came out, so they wanted to put together an album. They had 6 leftover songs from Beatles for Sale, and then they
which
also
had... Which was the Parlophone record that came out in England, Beatles
right,
for
that
Sale.
Was the one that had come out at the end of the year. They had that, and then also they had the single Ticket to Ride's flip side, Yes It Is. They didn't want to use Ticket to Ride because that was going to be in the film Help. And so in doing the math, they said, well, we need 11. Now we're up to 7. So we need to call EMI and see if they can get us 4 more songs. And EMI said, well, we've got these 2 songs, You Like Me Too Much and Tell Me What You See, which are going to be on our Help album but won't be in the film, so you can have those. And Capitol said, great, we're still too short. What can you do? So the Beatles went into the recording studio specifically for the purpose of recording 2 songs to give Capitol the requisite 11 songs. And because this had to be done quickly, rather than going in with something original and new, they knocked off 2 rockers from their stage show, actually 2 Larry Williams songs that John Lennon gives great vocals on.
Yeah, let's listen to Bad Boy, which is on Beatles 6. That's great fun to hear again. My guest today is Bruce Spizer. Bruce wrote the liner notes to a new box set called The Capitol Albums Volume 2, 4 CDs by the Beatles, all released in 1965. It struck me when you said this, Bruce, the Capitol Records wasn't going to have an album to come out from the Beatles for a couple of months. The idea that we would go 4 months without a record and it scares a record label is really petrified, amazing.
You know, well, I mean, the thing about it was, keep in mind that groups used to come in and out of style in a matter of months. And here were the Beatles, all of 1964, the Beatles were all the rage. And the challenge for Capitol in 1965 was to keep this great momentum going and constantly keep the Beatles, in the public eye. There wasn't MTV, there wasn't the internet. And the only way you really got the Beatles in the public mind was to release records. So you're right, a couple of months, oh my goodness, what are we going to do?
I mean, Beatles 6 came out, what did you say, June, and Help came out, I think it was the end of the summer of that.
Came out on August 13th, so okay. 2 months later.
That's amazing. How different was the American version of the soundtrack to Help? I mean, you'd think that they'd keep them pretty much the same over in England and here.
Well, that was totally different, and it kind of dates back to what United Artists had with A Hard Day's Night. United Artists actually did a movie on the Beatles because they wanted to get the American rights to a soundtrack album in the event the Beatles caught on in America, with the thinking of whatever we lost on the movie we'd make on the album. Very strange thinking, because they ended up making a ton of money on the movie as well. But what United Artists did was they released a true soundtrack album. It had 8 songs by the Beatles and 4 instrumental versions of Beatles songs by George Martin and his orchestra. Whereas in England, the album there had 7 Beatles songs from the film A Hard Day's Night on one side, and then other Beatles songs on the side 2 of the album. Well, the same thing happened with Help. In England, they released 7 songs from the film Help on side 1, and then 6 other Beatles songs on side 2.
And none of the instrumental stuff, the incidental music from the film.
No, none of that. Whereas Capitol, when they put the thing together, they were doing a soundtrack album, which meant that you could call it a soundtrack album, you can include instrumentals, you could make it a gatefold album with beautiful color pictures from the movie and charge $1 more than the standard rock album at the time because it was a soundtrack. You know, and they were big souvenirs, and people gladly paid the extra $1, and it sold 3 million units. And a lot of people say, well, gee, this really can't be a good album. I mean, it it has all these silly instrumentals, but it's a very fun album, and I think the opening of it is one of the greatest album openings of all time. It mixes two of my favorite icons from the 60s. Let's go ahead and play it, and then we can talk about it.
Great.
Somebody
help,
not just anybody
help,
you know I need someone
help.
When I was younger, so much younger than today,
I never needed
anybody's help in any way.
Now,
but now these days are gone, I'm not so self-assured.
Now I find
I've changed my mind and opened up the doors. You can, I'm feeling down, and I do appreciate you being round.
Help me get my feet back on the ground.
Won't you please, please help me?
So those Brits missed out on that great
yeah, I mean, you know,
great
to me,
beginning.
Combining James Bond and the Beatles doesn't get any better than that.
It really sums up 1964, 1965 pretty well, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
I remember listening to the Help album, and I was intrigued as a kid by the music, but I really sort of, if I'd known there was and didn't know, and that's one thing to point out, that we didn't really know there was a British album. For anybody who was a teenager living in America then, you didn't know there were two different versions of the record, unless you happened to be a world traveler of some sort. Now I think about it, and in subsequent years bought a German version of Help. It would have been kind of nice as a listener to be able to skip those incidental music things, but they were intriguing. And listening back to them, you hear some interesting stuff. Tell me about the person who wrote that music.
Yeah, a lot of people mistake it for being George Martin because he was their producer, but Ken Thorne actually was the musical director for it, and he was good friends with Richard Lester, who was the director of the film, and that's how that happened. But, you know, in re-listening to them years later, and believe me, it's been years since, you know, I had listened to them carefully, it was a lot of fun, and there was a lot more Indian music on it than I had remembered. And George was very influenced by this on the set of the
George
film.
Harrison.
George Harrison, right? He was first exposed to this type of music and particularly took a fascination with the sitar. And, of course, later on, he played sitar on Norwegian Wood, which was probably the first time that a rock song, you know, had sitar on it. You know, that the instrumentals certainly, I mean, things worked out really well. Had George Martin done the soundtrack for the film, you might not have had the Indian music, which might not have led to George picking up a sitar. So things seem to work out really well for the Beatles.
Let's listen to just a little bit of one of the incidental music pieces on that. You can hear the Indian influence you're talking about by Ken Thorne's soundtrack to Help. And it's a sense of humor that Ken Thorne has playing a version of a Beatles song from their last movie, A Hard Day's Night, and sticking it in the middle of Help.
And the fun thing about it is people who grew up with these things, they remember, oh, yeah, that was the scene in the Indian restaurant. And one of the nice things about playing the soundtrack is you hear a song and you think, oh, yeah, that's the scene where this happens. So, you know, at least I'm a very visual person. And when I hear these songs, I think of the scene in the movie they appeared in. So it brings back wonderful memories for me.
And all of this, the influence, you mentioned Norwegian Wood, the influence of Indian music, which obviously extended to George traveling there and so forth and goes beyond Ken Thorne, but leads us to Rubber Soul. And Rubber Soul was just an absolutely different record than anything they'd done before. And as an American growing up hearing this stuff, I can't imagine Rubber Soul being anything other than it was until so many years later when I heard the British version.
Yeah, it's a really strange thing because Rubber Soul has two different versions of it. The British version, which is undeniably a masterpiece, the first really great album the Beatles did that wasn't just, you know, a collection of songs. It was a well-thought-out collection of great songs that flowed together and worked well in its own way. And then the American version is, in its own way, a great album. And you might say, well, why did Capitol mess with it? Or, you know, what did they do? Well, first of all, Capitol was smart in knowing that it was a great album, and they didn't do much tinkering with it. They left the cover the same, which that hadn't happened really since Meet the Beatles. And they, you know, didn't go and call this thing like Beatles 8 or Beatles 66 or anything crazy like that. They went ahead and called it Rubber Soul, used the same cover. And they said, well, here's our situation. We don't even need to put a hit single on this. We don't need to put Day Tripper. We can work it out on it. What we're going to do is we're going to say, okay, what are our 12 songs going to be? Well, we have two leftover songs from Help. And those songs are, you know, I've Just Seen a Face and It's Only Love. And those are really nice acoustic songs. And they would fit in really well with this Rubber Soul album. And
which was a very kind of a folky record, sort of influenced by them meeting Bob Dylan and so forth.
Well, you know, very much so. And here was Capitol in a situation of you know, making good use of their leftovers, sort of say. And so they said, okay, if we take the two Help leftovers, which we have to use, you know, now we're up to 16 songs. That's four too many. Well, what are we going to do? Well, we're going to take Nowhere Man, because that's a hit single we can release in a couple of months and sell a million copies. And we're going to put What Goes On the B-side, because it's Ringo, and Ringo's the most popular Beatle in the States, so it's good to have him on the B-side.
On the B-side of the 45, yeah.
On the 45, that's correct. And then we're in that situation, and now we've got two more to drop. Well, what about dropping Drive My Car and If I Needed Someone, which are kind of rockier and don't really fit in with the rest of the album the way we see it. So they open the album up with I've Just Seen a Face, which is a very intricate acoustic guitar part by Paul McCartney, a song that got buried on Side Two of Help, and now it's the lead-off song on an album, and it just flows perfectly. And then they take It's Only Love and use that to start Side Two. So, you know, keeping the running order the same, except dropping the rockier songs. So what you have is a cohesive folk rock listening experience.
Well, what did the Beatles think of this?
Well, I think initially the Beatles liked what was happening in America because they were selling a bunch of records, but then they began to resent the fact that they were going into the studio and doing these carefully crafted albums, and the next thing they knew, Capitol was dissecting them, calling them different things, and putting them out. And so I do think they began to resent it, and Rubber Soul was, you know, one of the last times where it was, you know, Capitol got an album and made a lot of changes. The album after Rubber Soul, Yesterday and Today, was a Capitol creation. And then by Revolver, you know, they pretty much were falling into line. And, of course, Sgt. Pepper, you don't mess with a masterpiece. And, you know, under the new contracts the Beatles had, Capitol no longer had the ability to change things without the Beatles' approval.
Good. Let's listen to, we mentioned Norwegian Wood, it's in my head. Let's listen to the beginning of Norwegian Wood.
She once had me. She showed me her room. Isn't it good? Norwegian wood. She asked me to stay and she told me to sit anywhere. So I looked around and I noticed there wasn't a chair. I sat on the
You know, one of the things that I remember, and it struck me as a kid listening to Rubber Soul, was when I went to a friend's house to listen to Rubber Soul at his house, it was a different version than some of the stuff I had on my record, and we both had the American album. So when I went to my friend Alan's house, his version started off with this weird false start, and my version didn't do that. So it took a while to solve this out.
Your friend was richer than you. He bought the stereo version of the album, which cost him a dollar more than your mono version of that album, because the mono version of the Capitol Al Rubber Soul on I'm Looking Through You doesn't have that false start, whereas the stereo does.
So the Beatles and George Martin and their engineers, they mix a version of the record, they mix it in stereo. What happens to the record that it gets changed? Would George Martin actually mix a mono version and a stereo version of the same record?
Yes. They would do. And the emphasis generally was on the mono versions, because stereo in those days was for freaks. So when they were doing it, they would do a mono mix, and then at the end, go ahead and do a stereo mix. And what may have happened here was they had forgotten that on the mono mix, they had cut this guitar intro as being unnecessary. So they left it on the stereo mix, and the tape got sent to Capitol. And by the time they put the British album together, when George Martin was having it mastered in England, they went ahead and edited off that beginning. So the only place it was released like that with the false start guitar intro on I'm Looking Through You is on the Capitol stereo Rubber Soul.
And I think that raised a flag to a lot of people who were in love with the Beatles, that if you go back and you listen, and one of the nice things about this box set is that what you get when you listen to the early Beatles or Beatles 6 or Help or Rubber Soul is you get the songs in order of how they were in the American versions in stereo, and then on the same disc, you get all the versions in mono. But one of the cool things was about having a stereo version of, let's say, a song called Girl. The way they did stereo mixes back then was you'd often have most of the band on one side and all the voices on the other side. So,
Rubber Soul is really a strange one, because earlier when we were playing Twist and Shout, you had vocals on one side, instruments on the other, and that was recorded on a two-track. And George Martin did it that way, so when he mixed it down for mono, which was the key thing they were doing, you could get the proper balance between the vocals and the instruments. By the time Rubber Soul was out, they were using four tracks, and on Help and some of the other albums, you did not have this severe stereo separation. But for reasons unknown, the songs on Rubber Soul have this strong stereo separation on most of them, where you get vocals on one side, instruments on the other. And I really don't know why that happened, but I was fascinated that way, because as a kid, I could just listen to the instruments or I could just listen to the vocals. So you were able to clearly hear what the Beatles were singing, hear the beauty of their harmonies. And it's a lot of fun to isolate one or the other. And, it's an anomaly. When Rubber Soul was out on CD in 1987, George Martin remixed them and centered the vocals. But what I find really cool about the box set is you play the stereo Rubber Soul, and you get it. It's a lot of fun to hear that.
Well, let's be a kid again. Let's go and give a listen to the song Girl, and you can hear in one ear the vocals and the other ear the instruments.
Is there anybody going to listen to my story, all about the girl who came to stay? She's the kind of girl you want so much it makes you sorry. Still, you don't regret a single day. Oh, girl. Girl, girl. When I think of all the times I've tried so hard to leave her, she will turn to me and start to cry. And she promises the earth to me, and I believe her. After all this time, I don't know why. Oh, girl. Girl, girl. She's the kind of girl who puts you down when friends are there, you feel a fool. When we say she's looking good, she acts as if it's understood she's cool.
Now, I'm going to ask our engineer, Bill Deputy, if he can go and just play us, for the last 15, 20 seconds, the right side, so we can just hear the vocals. Did you do this as a kid, Bruce?
Absolutely. And I thought, my God, they're singing something naughty in the background.
Let's listen.
She's the kind of girl who puts
you down when friends are there, you feel a fool. When you say she's looking good, she acts as if it's understood she's cool.
Sounds great. So we have two volumes that are out now. We would get what would be to the next record of an American record is Yesterday and Today. What would be volume three? I mean, there are quirks in the catalog, but it started to, like you say, lockstep. The Sgt. Pepper was Sgt. Pepper. And
yeah, I mean, you know, volume one was 1964. Volume two is 1965. Volume three would be sort of a catch-all. Obviously, Yesterday and Today, which is a unique American album, and with its infamous Butcher cover, that we could do a whole show on. And moving beyond that, you have the Hey Jude album, which, although it was on an Apple label, was distributed by Capitol and was unique to America. And in 1980, Capitol ended up putting out the soundtrack to A Hard Day's Night, because a few years earlier they had taken over United Artists Record, and that's never been issued in the box sets, and that's a unique album with the George Martin instrumentals. So I think that Volume 3 is going to be kind of a catch-all thing, which is in a way appropriate that, you know, because the lead album on it, Yesterday and Today, was kind of a catch-all album. So I think it'll be a lot of fun. I certainly hope there'll be a Volume 3.
And what's left to be remastered in the Beatles catalog?
Well, the entire British catalog, I'm sure that sometime within the next couple of months we'll be hearing more about that being released. I'm not exactly sure what release dates are planned, but the entire British catalog will be remastered and released. Bear in mind, it first came out on CD almost 20 years ago, so it does need to be remastered because the technology has improved so much. And so when these albums come out, and they'll be the British albums, and they'll sound light years ahead of what they sounded like 20 years ago.
When we say remastered, on these records, they basically took the tapes that were the mixes and cleaned up those mixes. They didn't go back to the original four-track tapes to do these, right?
No, they didn't, and that is always an option that can be done in the future and ultimately may be done. I think the best way to understand what can be done is there's an album that kind of snuck by people a few years ago called Yellow Submarine Songtrack. So for Yellow Submarine Songtrack, they took those four tracks and split them up to where you had 16 tracks running across. You sync them up on computer, and then you can remix the 16 tracks. The best example might be a song like Eleanor Rigby, where, you know, you had your strings, but you couldn't do anything with the strings. You had your vocals, but you couldn't do anything with them except, you know, put them in one place. Well, when you've got 16 different tracks of strings and vocals, you can mix them any way you want. So to get an idea of the future of what the Beatles catalog may sound like, if you haven't already bought Yellow Submarine Songtrack, go on and buy it. It's a real treat, and that'll give you an idea of the breathtaking mixes that lie ahead.
They really are spectacular. Bruce Beiser, thanks so much. It's great to have you.
Oh, always a pleasure, and hope we can be doing something again real soon.
Bruce Beiser wrote the liner notes to the new box set called Capitol Albums Volume 2. It's four CDs by the Beatles, all released in 1965. They came out this week. From Rubber Soul, let's listen to I've Just Seen a Face. I'm Bob Boylan from NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.
I've just seen a face, I can't forget the time or place where we just met. She's just a girl for me, and I want all the world to see we've met. Had it been another day, I might have looked the other way, and I'd have never been aware. But as it is, I'll dream of her tonight. La da 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 da. Falling, yes I am falling, and she keeps calling me back again. I have never known the like of this. I've been alone and I have missed things and kept out of sight. One of the girls were never quite like this. Da-da-da-da-da. Falling, yes I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again.